Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 482, an interview with Daniel Hopsicker. This is being recorded on October 21st of the year 2004. Before we get to the interview with Daniel Hopsicker, the author of Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, let me remind you, first of all, that the CD duplication service that stocks all of the programs and lectures I've done over the years, Spitfire, has a website, www.spitfirelist.com. That website features a number of invaluable items. First of all, there are detailed, annotated, article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. There are also descriptions of the other programs and lectures I've done over the years. There also is a search function to enable you to look for any particular item. There is also the book, the vitally important book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, by the late Paul Manning, available for download for free on the Spitfire website. It's in a combination of HTML and Adobe. We will have that corrected at some point. It's simply a question of workload. If there's somebody who would like to scan that book into HTML to save bandwidth, that would be most welcome. Also, the Spitfire website has a link to a website that features all of the original documents that prove not only the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry, but Prescott Bush Sr.'s involvement with individuals and institutions trafficking Nazi money abroad after World War II, thereby proving his involvement with the Mormon milieu. Last but certainly not least, there are links to two websites maintained by the heroic sister station WFMU-FM. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows available for download only at a longer URL linked to that address. And we have spoken about many aspects of the September 11th investigation. We've covered many of the European connections, many of the Muslim Brotherhood connections, some of the German and American neo-Nazi links. We've covered the links through Saudi Arabia to the Bush administration. But one of the things that we have not covered is something that has been covered in magnificent and, I would say, heroic detail by our guest. Our guest is Daniel Hopsicker. Daniel, welcome to our airwaves.
Pleasure to be with you. I'm honored.
All righty. I think I'm going to begin by reading one short paragraph on from page 229 of your book. The book in question, just released, is called Welcome to Terrorland, subtitled Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida. And we're going to be taking a look at what was going on in Florida, the very, very dirty business indeed, or borrowing from a title of a European book called Schmutzige Geschäfte und Heiliger Krieg, Dirty Business and Holy War. On page 229 of your book, Daniel, you write, "Lurking just beneath the surface of American life, it seemed, was massive corruption on an unheard-of scale, presided over by modern-day untouchables, members of an organization, a global network operating well outside the law and getting away with it." I think that's in many ways sums up, if one could sum up your magnificent book in just a couple of sentences, I think that's a pretty good summation of that. Daniel, a lot of people who've looked at September 11th have noticed or have commented on the apparent discrepancy between the amount of flying experience that many of these hijackers had and the apparent piloting skills that were demonstrated by the people who were able to kamikaze these commercial airline flights into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. One of the things that you note in your book is that it appears that a lot of these people had flying skills way beyond what the official version has reported. And I wonder if you would start, if we could start as a point of departure, by discussing the alleged training of some of these hijacking pilots at secure U.S. military facilities, something you write about at length.
Sure, Dave. It's not alleged either. It's because it hasn't been retracted.
Sure.
One of the first things that I did when I got to Florida and began my investigation into Atta and the terrorist conspiracy down here was to follow a friend's cynical dictum that the only real news you get about anything big comes out in the first 24, 48, 72 hours before they get the cover-up put in place. So as a result of that, I read both the local news clips, all of them, and national news clips in the days after 9/11. And 5 days after 9/11, an extraordinary story appeared in a number of major national newspapers. It was in the Washington Post. It was in Newsweek. It was in the Miami Herald. It was in the Gannett papers. And the story disclosed that Mohammed Atta and five of the other 19 hijackers had received training at secure U.S. military facilities, that Mohammed Atta himself had attended International Officers School at Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama, and that one had gone to the Defense Language Institute out near Monterey, a highly secure facility. Someone else had, another of the hijackers had attended the Aerospace Medical Institute at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. The story was denied the next day by the Pentagon in the most unbelievable way possible. I mean, it was a vague denial saying, well, you know, some of the ages don't match up with the biographies of the people we have, never saying specifically that, oh, no, this couldn't be Mohammed Atta. You know, it's another Mohammed Atta. So that was one of the things I focused on when I came down here, because I had already received so many indications that Mohammed Atta was not the Islamic fundamentalist slipping under U.S. radar that he had been portrayed as. And I followed the story, pursued the story, and eventually got a backhanded confirmation, I believe, from a Pentagon spokesman 6-7 months later.
And the point being that obviously these individuals were operating in some capacity that gave them official access to the national security corridors, or at least some of them, in the United States.
Sure. If you talk to Navy pilots at the Pensacola Naval Air Station, where three of the 19 received training, in published interviews, they said that there were literally, I don't want to specify the number, dozens, okay, of Saudi pilots rotating through. And even people that were Saudi, they were brought in by the Saudis, but not necessarily Saudi. So it used to be, they said, these pilots said, that 20 years ago, there were hundreds of Iranians being trained in Florida. And now it was Saudi. And indeed, I bumped up everywhere in Florida with Saudi penetration of military and civilian life down here.
And indeed, there is a long record, we haven't got time to go into it here, of Saudi collaboration with the U.S. National Security Establishment on all kinds of covert operations, ranging, of course, from the Afghan Mujahideen support effort to the Contras and a number of other things.
Right. And this, of course, fit in with probably my basic discovery, which was that between 1999 and the September 11th attack in 2001, literally hundreds of Arab pilots rotated through Southwest Florida to learn to fly, or ostensibly to learn. Literally hundreds went from 3 or 4 in 98 to 599 to 1,500 in 2000, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at an operation, my friend, an operation of someone, of some consequence, of an organization of some consequence. Once I had identified, I mean, this could not be, it could not be that literally hundreds of Arab men flooded, you know, specific flight schools to learn to fly without it being noticed by the national security organs of the U.S. government. It's impossible that that could have happened without their knowledge, understanding, go-ahead, approval, you know, inspiration, whatever. Right?
Okay. All righty. And now, one of the points that I wanted to get into, and again, it has been one of the discussion points about September 11th, that the piloting that took place on during the attacks would appear to be beyond that of the relatively novice flyers that we are told these hijackers were. And yet, when you began delving into what you call the Venice Flying Circus, an imbroglio involving several flight schools, a number of overlapping criminal and apparent national security operations in the Venice and Naples, Florida area, you found out that a lot of the people, including apparently Mohammed Atta, actually had a lot more flying experience, and we were told some of them were licensed pilots in other countries, so that these were not novices. I wonder if you could go into that and perhaps detail that a bit for us.
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. I mean, and the story itself illustrates what we're looking at September 11th. After a six-month search, I found Mohammed Atta's American girlfriend. He had lived for 2 months in Venice, across the street from the airport, in an apartment with a pink-haired stripper lingerie model.
And that is a woman named Amanda Keller.
Amanda Keller, whose 11 words to the press after September 11th were, "I can't really say anything. I'm afraid I'll get in trouble."
And by the way, just interjecting a point, that was one of the things that you found with a lot of the people who had firsthand experience with various people, including Mohammed Atta, people who knew things about the flight schools that we're going to be going into, and a lot of them experienced that same pressure.
You are something of a Kennedy expert, and I'm sure you saw this in your investigations of Kennedy assassination. What I saw in Florida were several dozen eyewitnesses who had been intimidated. Anyway, through finding Amanda Keller and hearing what she had to say, I mean, you know, she was not she was an eyewitness, and she's not stupid, but she of course wasn't interested in covert activity. Okay, she was interested in other things, but still she saw things. And one of the things she saw, when his flight bag, their flight bags were highly secure items, these people's flight bags. So when they went for a 3-day weekend down to Key West, they rented 3 motel rooms, 2 rooms of stay, and then 1 room just to keep the flight bags in. Okay.
Uh huh.
When some contents of the flight bag spilled out, she saw that he had a half a dozen pilot's licenses from other countries. And so there. So his presence in the U.S. As a flight student was merely, is his legend, is his cover, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That was his ostensible purpose. Whatever he was in actuality doing in the U.S., had very little to do or nothing to do with learning to fly.
Which he already did, and I would add parenthetically, and let me also stress to listeners that we're going to do the best we can to do justice to the book in the rough hour that we have, but to really gain a handle on what happened in Florida vis-a-vis September 11th, and also, frankly, to get a handle on this wonderful book that Daniel has written, get the book and read it. And I don't get no commercial kickbacks here from doing this. But a lot of these people, both the Arabs and something we'll talk about later, some of Atta's German associates, appear to have been very experienced flyers, licensed pilots in other countries, and not novices or students, unquote, at all, right?
Exactly. And the man who supposedly flew the most skill was shown by the pilot who hit the Pentagon.
Sure.
Who executed apparently what pilots say was a maneuver that a military jet can do, but to do that with an airliner showed a high degree of skill.
Sure.
I was told, hey, I have no idea, by UPI's counterterrorism correspondent that that pilot Hani Hanjour had been a pilot in the Saudi Air Force.
So this was no novice.
no novice at all. Yet the Honey Hanjour, who went to flight school in Southern California, apparently was a bumbler. To me, the picture of Honey Hanjour that was released recently going through Washington, D.C., it does not seem to match up with the Honey Hanjour mugshot. So they may have slipped the military pilot in at the last moment.
Mm-hmm. With regard to what was taking place in Venice, and we're going to focus in microcosm on some flight schools and some very, very interesting individuals, but one of the things that was taking place in Little Venice, California, Venice, Florida, excuse me, and you point out that this is a retirement community, very quiet place, not a hub of commercial activity at all, but that Islam bin Laden, Osama's half-brother, who manages the Saudi investment company, the holding company that secures many of the bin Laden family's lucrative businesses, that he sent his pilots down to Venice. I wonder if you could flesh that out for us.
Well, that came out, it was a European writer who first discovered that. It was, you know, just another piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
The two men, look, I mean, in any country with a free press, okay, 3 days after September 11th, it was in the news, although it wasn't, attention was not drawn to it the way it should have been, that three of the four pilots of the hijacked planes had operated out of the tiny Venice, Florida airport at one of two flight schools, each of whom had been purchased a year earlier by two separate Dutch nationals.
Right.
That's, it's amazing. I called a famous Southern lawman who's not on, you know, what I would consider our side on most issues, or hasn't been in the past, but he's an old guy, and he's been around forever. Jack Ruby was an informant of his in the 50s, and I ran through, and he's wildly colorful, and I ran through this story about, you know, three of the four pilots trained at two flight schools, each owned by a Dutch national.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, you know, and he said, he said, that's one damn Dutch boy too many, you know. He said, it's untidy.
Untidy, I think, would be a word that would describe virtually all of the activities that are discussed in your book, Daniel. You talk about these flying schools run by Rudy Deckers and Arnie Krutoff. Is that how his name is pronounced?
That's right.
Given again we're trying to, in a sense, do the impossible, an overview of Rudy Deckers, Arnie Krutoff.
Right. Well, this was the question that should have been asked, should it not? Okay. When it came out that these 19 terrorists had been in this country for, you know, a year and a half or so, the key cadre members, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In a country with a free press, the Washington Post would have sent down, you know, the equivalent of Woodward and Bernstein to find out who these guys were, what they'd been doing, to knock on their neighbors' doors, to discover who their associates had been, right?
Mm-hmm.
None of that was done, dude. Dave?
Yeah.
None. I mean, I got down here too much. I got down here and I was alone. All right?
Right.
And it was slightly scary too, by the way.
Oh yeah, well one of the reasons why I used the extreme praise in describing your book that I did is that it's not to be fatuous or to curry favor, but it took a lot of dedication, a lot of bravery, and considerable globes, shall we say, on your part to do this. And it wouldn't be surprising at all to be afraid. If you weren't afraid, it seems that you were practically the only person with knowledge of what was going on down there who wasn't, because many of the people that you tried to talk to told you in no uncertain terms that they feared for either their lives or their families' lives.
Exactly. The people close to the flight school, yes. You know, here's why I wasn't afraid, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I saw September 11th happen.
Right.
Okay? There was a radical change in the calculus of of you know, human momentum on September 11th, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And whereas 5 years ago when I was in Louisiana interviewing associates of CIA pilot and biggest drug smuggler in history, Barry Seal, you know, former covert operatives would occasionally be dismissive, you know, and threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Not now, not after September 11th, okay? They went too far, and even they realized it.
The operation itself, and I've done a lot of work over the years on September 11th. I think it's a very complicated situation, and there are foreign elements. Again, there are Nazi elements. Both the old guard, a primary Odessa operative named Francois Genoux, was a primary advisor to the Bin Laden family, and had people on the board of directors of SECO. And yet, it also overlaps U.S. Covert operations. The board of directors of SECO overlaps many of the Iran-Contra-related drug smuggling operations that were going through Europe that we saw, that listeners are familiar with.
They're still here.
Sure.
I mean, the other airport that Mohammed Atta operated out of was next door in Charlotte County.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't hear anything about that because at that airport were and are Frank Moss, a famous Iran-Contra drug pilot whose phone number was in Oliver North's notebooks, and Dietrich Reinhardt, the German who ran a CIA-nominated airline called Saint Lucia, involved in Iran-Contra, who had its plane seized on the runway of at MENA Airport, by federal prosecutors who alleged that the airline had brought billions of dollars worth of cocaine into this country. Okay,
but
they're right. They were and are right here.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to. We're going to ease into some of those connections that you've already touched on. But with regard to Rudy Deckers and Arne,
and the biggest thing, and I don't mean to, but I mean, if I was meeting you on the street,
mm-hmm.
okay, and you said, well, what did you find? Okay, what I would want you to know was that the owner of the flight school, to whose school both Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, the two pilots who took down the World Trade Center, came,
mm-hmm.
Had his Learjet confiscated the same month they got here, with 43 pounds of heroin on board.
Mm-hmm. And
I caught these people red-handed, Dave. Okay.
Yep.
I have them red damn handed, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you haven't heard anything about this from Mike Rupert, have you?
No, Mike is a former associate of mine, and to the best of my knowledge, hasn't covered this.
Mike Rupert portrayed himself as a CIA drug warrior for 3 or 4 years, okay? These people have been caught red-handed. Okay.
Yeah.
And this is a chance to expose them.
It is.
And when push comes to shove, Rupert's selling peak oil, and that's all I want to say about that.
Yeah. Let's leave Mike out of this because it puts me in a difficult position as a former associate.
It just occurs to me, right? As I'm telling you.
Yeah.
That the owner of the flight school that Atta was going to lost his Learjet when they found 43 pounds of heroin on it. It was the biggest seizure in Central Florida history.
Well, this operation that through which Atta and these people were able to secret their way into the United States is something that veteran listeners to my broadcast are familiar with. It's what Henrik Krüger called in 1980 the Miami Conspiracy, meaning larger than Miami, but it's an imbroglio, a filigree of intelligence and organized crime that is absolutely untouchable to law enforcement. Let's sort of dolly back for a couple of minutes, Daniel, and let's talk about Rudy Deckers and Arne Krutoff and the fact that they appeared, like a lot of the people in this story, to be able to break every conceivable rule, to break every business rule, every FAA rule, every legal rule, and get away with it. We only have a couple of minutes on this side.
Sure.
But
let me just tell you a quick story.
Sure.
I interviewed Once again, the gestalt has changed, all right? So when I went to Naples, Florida, and interviewed people that that worked in the operation, okay, the human beings among them were horrified at what had transpired, okay, and they talked, not for attribution always, but they but a few of them talked. Rudy Dekkers operated in an illegal fashion completely with impunity. He was reported to the FAA for doing something that is so dangerous that people die, okay, from what he did. And the FAA official that came out to take the reports told the person that was making it, you don't want to place this report. You don't want the trouble that this is going to bring you.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy Dekkers is protected.
It appears, and we're going to take a break here because we're almost finished with this side of the broadcast. It appears that the cast of characters that were the executive personnel in the operations through which Atta and the other hijackers moved were absolutely beyond the reach of the law, and they could do absolutely anything. You note that Rudy Dekkers never could pay his rent. He had millions of dollars and yet was a complete deadbeat on every financial obligation he had. He was able to break every rule the FAA
did and
get away with it.
Wait, I tell you what he's doing now.
Well, what is Mr. Dekkers doing now?
I'll tell you when we come back.
All righty, we will do that. We have been visiting with Daniel Hopsicker, the author of the consummately important and just released book, Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida. We will be telling you how to order that book and other materials from Mad Cow Productions, but we're going to do that inside, too. And that is the end of the first side of the actual interview with Daniel Hopsicker. Remember that the various CDs of the tape programs and lectures I've done over the years are available from Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Be sure to visit their website at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire List is one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E-L-I-S-T. .com. There are written annotated descriptions of all of the For the Record programs in the For the Record section, descriptions of all of the programs and lectures I've done over the years, links to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM that have all of the For the Record programs on real audio, link to a website with the actual declassified U.S. government documents proving the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and most importantly, after World War II, and the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, available for download for free. If there's somebody who can help us to convert the entire book into edited, proofread, I should say, HTML, that would be most welcome. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 482, an interview with Daniel Hopsicker. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.